3. Jill Darvish had last spoken with her husband when he'd landed at Christchurch Airport and picked up a rental car to make the journey south. He'd assured her that he'd ring again when he arrived to say goodnight, but she had texted him a little after 8 to say that actually she was turning in. A week of leading back-to-back mental health and well-being workshops had left her too exhausted even for trash telly and a takeaway, which was how she usually spent the rare nights they were apart. She'd asked him please not to ring her after all, had said she hoped that he was driving safely and drinking lots of water and stopping every hour to stretch his legs and letting other people pass him in the passing bays, and had signed off by saying that she missed him, which wasn't strictly true, but was something that she knew he loved to hear. She no longer felt annoyed that he had booked the trip without consulting her. He'd been so nervous about the conservation project launch, she told herself, as she cleansed and toned and moisturized, and then dabbed 3 tiny dots of serum underneath each eye. And then he'd been so disappointed when Lemoyne hadn't showed up at the launch, though he'd done his best to hide it. The long drive down to Thorndyke might be just the thing to set him right. He always said he did his best thinking behind the wheel. She turned out the light and slept soundly for almost 13 hours. When she woke the next morning, she was a little miffed to see that he hadn't sent a text to say that he'd got in safe. But then again, she reasoned, belting on her rope, she had asked him not to wake her, and he would have been worn out from all that driving. He'd probably gone straight to bed when he arrived. After she had showered and dressed, she walked down the hill to buy a cappuccino from their favourite Wellington cafe and drank it looking at the stationery display in the window of the post office, enjoying the sensation of allowing her mind to wander as it pleased, forming impressions and following associations that for once she was not obliged to share in conversation. She had one last mental health workshop to lead that afternoon, and she was just wondering if she had time to pop downtown before the class and do a little clothes shopping, something for her own mental health, when her phone buzzed in her pocket, and she took it out to see that her dad was calling. That meant the landline at the Thorndyke house. She knew she really ought to update the contact details, but even after all this time, she still couldn't quite bring herself to delete his name. She binned her empty coffee cup and answered the call. "Hello, love," she said. "How was the drive?" But it wasn't Sir Owen. It was Lemoyne.
"Jill," he said. "It's Robert. Sorry to trouble you. I'm trying to reach your husband."
Lady Darvish felt her heart clutch in her chest. "He's there," she said stupidly. "He's at the house."
"Yeah, I was waiting for him," Lemoyne said. "He emailed a few days ago to tell me he was coming down, and I sent back a message to say, great, see you then. But then I guess the reply got stuck in my draft somehow, and I didn't notice till this morning. Sorry to bother you. I just thought he might have changed his plans because I didn't reply to his email. I tried calling his cell just now, but it's off."
Lady Darvish was hardly following. "But he's at the house," she said again. "He's in Thorndyke. He drove down last night." There was a pause. Then Lemoyne said,
"No, Jill. He's not here."
"He flew down to Christchurch," she said, feeling a rising panic. "Yesterday, after work. He rented a car at the airport. He was going to drive straight there."
"That's what he told me, too," said Lemoyne, sounding puzzled. "You sure he didn't change his plans?"
"We spoke on the phone when he landed. Maybe 3:30.
"Huh," said Lemoyne. "Well, I flew in about 5. I waited up for him till about..."
"He didn't think you were going to be there," she said.
"Yeah," he said. "So stupid of me. This email thing. Got caught in my drafts."
"But I don't understand," she said. "Where could he be?"
"Look, I'm sure everything's fine," said Lemoyne. "Maybe he was tired and pulled over somewhere."
"No, he would have told me," she said. Her voice was getting high and tight. "He would have texted me. Something's happened."
"Let's not jump to conclusions," said Lemoyne. "I mean, his phone might have died. He might have..."
"He charges his phone in the car," she said.
"But didn't you say it was a rental?"
"Oh, yeah," she said, allowing herself to feel hope. "Yeah, okay."
"It could be a million different things," said Lemoyne.
"Yeah," she said again. "Okay.
Let's figure this out," he said. "Is there anywhere he might have stopped? Any friends along the way he might have wanted to visit?"
"No," she said. "No, I told you. He was going to go straight home."
"Okay," said Lemoyne. "Okay. And someone would have called me, she said. If anything... There was a pause, and then Lemoyne said,
Sorry to ask, but did he ever pick up hitchhikers?
Oh, God, she said, horrified. No, I mean, maybe once or twice if they... But no, not for years, not at night, no.
Sorry to alarm you, said Lemoyne. The thought just occurred to me.
They were both quiet. You said you'd just tried to call him, she said.
Yeah, I couldn't get through.
They were quiet again.
We could try to locate his phone, Lemoyne said. Oh, but no, I guess we'd need his Gmail password.
I know it, she said.
You do?
Lemoyne said, sounding surprised.
Well, fantastic. Then we can find him, easy.
Really? She said. We can do that.
Sure, if he's with his phone, said Lemoyne. You haven't used Find My Device before?
No, she said. This has never happened before. This isn't like him at all.
Are you at your computer? He said. Go to your computer and Google Find My Device.
She'd already started to run back up the hill. Wait, she said. I'm going home.
Jill,
he said firmly.
Let's keep our heads, okay? It's probably nothing, all right?
She promised she'd call him back in a minute, then hung up and tried Sir Owen's number, just in case. But as Lemoyne had told her, it was off.
This is Owen Darvish. Leave a message,
said the voice in her ear. More familiar to her than any other voice, dearer to her than any other voice. And she tried to keep her own voice steady, saying, Hi, love, it's Jill. Just wondering where you are. Give me a ring back as soon as you get this. She hesitated and then said, more huskily, I love you. She was blinking back tears as she pressed the button to hang up, feeling the enormity of her love for him and how utterly crucial he was to her in every way, and how precarious and colorless and insubstantial her life would be without him. For it wasn't even her life. It was their life. It was a single life that they had shared between them, an existence they had forged and built together, that they had inhabited together. And she was inextricable from him, and he from her. And if they could have their time again, she thought, wildly now, running up the hill, she wouldn't do any of it any differently, not even for a second, not even the hard times, not even the arguments and the mistakes. If she could do it over, she'd keep everything exactly as it was. Back at the flat, she turned on the computer and called the landline at the farm. Lemoyne waited while she Googled Find My Device, typed in Sir Owen's email login details, and then pressed search. It took only 7 seconds to return a result. A map popped up on the screen, and then a little grey icon of a phone appeared, bearing the tag Owen's phone, and beneath it, last seen, 18-8-17, 23-32. Oh! She said, leaning close to the screen.
What is it?
Said Lemoyne. He's in Thorndyke.
Really?
Said Lemoyne.
Well, that's good. What's the timestamp?
23:32, she said. Last night. No, this can't be right.
What?
It says he was up at the lookout, she said.
What's the lookout?
On the road up to the pass. There's a lookout over the lake.
Isn't it closed?
Yeah, she said, but the barricade is further on. You can still get to the lookout.
The location might be approximate, said Lemoyne.
Could it be a mistake, like a glitch? Could it be showing me past data or something?
Why do you say that?
Well, why would he go up there at night? There'd be nothing to see. Lemoyne seemed to hesitate. Then he said,
Dial back the clock a bit. Do you see the timeline function?
Yeah, she said.
What time did you say he left the airport?
About 3:30, she said.
Input that, said Lemoyne,
and she did. And several seconds later, the icon appeared again, showing Owen's phone in a parking lot in Christchurch, bearing the tag 18-8-17, 15-31.
What do you see? Said Lemoyne.
Yeah, I see him, she said. 3:30, he was picking up the rental.
All right, wind it forward. See where he went.
She wound the timeline forward and saw the icon make its journey south. Yeah, she said presently. He got into Thorndyke at 8:40.
And then what?
Well, there's a gap, she said.
The signal around here is a bit patchy, he said. What's the next location after 8:40?
At the lookout, she said. At 11:32. And that's the last one.
Neither of them spoke for a moment.
Then he said, like you said, it might be a glitch. But do you want me to drive up and see?
Would you? She said in a flood of relief. Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.
I'll go now. Call me if he gets in touch in the meantime.
Robert, she said. Really, thank you. It's very kind of you to take the trouble.
Let's find him first, said Lemoyne.
After she'd hung up, she checked Sir Owen's email and saw one unread message from Robert Lemoyne, sent barely an hour ago. It was headed, RE Fairy Turn Takes Flight, and Lemoyne had written,
Owen, apologies, thought I sent this days ago. R. Hi, Owen. Congrats on the launch. Wish I could have made it. As you know, I'm in California this week, but let's plan to meet at your place this weekend. I'm liking what I'm seeing from the Burnham crew, and I think we should progress to next steps. Hope you'll agree. Talk soon. Looking forward. Robert.
Lady Darvish was frowning. What was he talking about? Who were the Burnham crew? She scrolled down to read Sir Owen's original email, sent late on Tuesday afternoon. But it was just a long account of the conservation project launch in Northland. He had embedded a clip from the video segment that had aired on the 6 o'clock news, which Lady Darvish had already seen. She was about to click away from it when she saw a postscript underneath the video.
BTW, Sir Owen had written. I'm going to be in Thorndyke this weekend, just to check on things. Arrive late Friday night. Maybe I'll catch you if you're there. The best, Owen.
Out of habit, Lady Darvish made a tutting noise. Sir Owen had never quite joined the 21st century when it came to formatting his emails. Why on earth had he placed the PS below the video, where it might have easily been missed, rather than above it, in the body of the message? Still shaking her head, she typed the word Burnham into her search engine, but all that came up was a map of a village in Scotland, various high school exam questions about Shakespeare's Macbeth, and closer to home, a Facebook page for some kind of gardening society in Christchurch that appeared to go by the name Burnham Wood. We are a grassroots community initiative, the profile page stated. We plant sustainable organic gardens in neglected spaces, and we are committed to the principles of solidarity and mutual aid. The photos showed thriving residential gardens, artfully arranged salad bowls and boxes of seasonal produce, smiling young people hard at work digging and pruning and watering seedlings. This couldn't be right. Lady Darvish was frowning again as she went back to Sir Owen's email and searched for Burnham in his messages instead. The search returned one result, an email exchange between Sir Owen and Lemoyne that bore the subject heading Burnham Wood. It was dated 3 weeks ago.
Hi, Robert, Sir Owen had written. Good to talk earlier. I meant to say, not sure what Jill will make of all this, so perhaps best to keep it just between us for now. Not meaning to deceive as such, just wanting to make a good first impression if and when we do go live. All best, Owen.
A few hours later, Lemoyne had sent back a brief reply.
Fine with me.
That was the end of the thread. Lady Darvish sat back in pure astonishment. Sir Owen had a secret. The man who had not managed to surprise her in 30 years of birthdays and Christmases, whom she could read better than she could read herself, who lied so badly, so ineptly and implausibly, that his deficiency had long become a family joke. He had a secret. With Robert Lemoyne. She read his words again, not meaning to deceive as such, and felt herself blush. Well, he had deceived her. He had done it. She had been deceived. But why? Why would he hide something from her? Why would he hide anything from her? What was there to hide? She went back to the Facebook page for Burnham Wood and called up the photo reel again, clicking through the images more slowly now. The members of the group were all in their 20s and 30s. She could see nobody remotely close to her own age. She lingered on a photo of a smiling young woman proudly holding up a gigantic marrow for the camera. And an old saying popped into her head, that there were two things that would always be believed of any man, and one of them was that he had taken to drink. But not Owen, she thought, blushing again. Other men, yes, of course, but not Owen. Then she remembered his strange behaviour earlier that week, after he'd spoken with that so-called journalist, Anthony, when he'd been so agitated.
and then he'd gone ahead and booked a flight down south without consulting her. Had that been just another lie? She wondered suddenly, crazily, if Anthony was even real. But of course he was. She was being stupid. Sir Owen had forwarded his approach to her, and they'd discussed it on the phone, and she'd visited the guy's website, for heaven's sake. She'd read his writing, or at least she'd started to. Of course Anthony was real. Lady Darvish drummed her fingernails against the edge of the desk, trying to suppress the sense of dread that was pooling in her stomach and climbing up her throat. Sir Owen had said that Anthony was down in Thorndyke. All right, well, perhaps they were together now. That would make sense, since Anthony was the reason he'd gone down there in the first place. Wasn't he? Perhaps they'd gone up to the lookout together for some reason, to talk about that radiometric thing. And then Sir Owen had left his phone there by accident, and then it had run out of battery and he hadn't noticed, or he'd dropped it, and they'd driven away. And any moment now he was going to call and say, "Sorry, love, you must have been so worried. Look, you're not going to believe what happened to me last night." She could give Anthony a call, she thought. At the very least, it would give her a way to pass the time while she waited for Lemoyne to call her back. She searched for his email in Sir Owen's inbox, but nothing came up. Sir Owen must have deleted it. Paranoid, probably, in case it leaked somehow that they'd blabbed the Malloys. No matter. She still had the copy on her own phone that he had forwarded to her. She took it out, found the email, and retrieved Anthony's number, feeling a little better that she was taking the initiative. And telling herself bravely that if all this did turn out to be a storm in a teacup, it might be quite a good story to share at her mental health workshop that afternoon. She could use it as an icebreaker to illustrate how quick we are to panic, how easy it is to lose perspective and assume the very worst. "Of course it turned out he was absolutely fine," she imagined saying to the group with a laugh. "But for a moment there, I really thought I'd lost my mind." She dialed the number.
"Hi, you've reached Tony. You know what to do. Cheers," said the recorded voice in her ear.
Disappointed, she hung up before the beep, and then thought better of it and dialed again.
"Tony, hi. Jill Darvish here," she said,
speaking more calmly now.
"I think you spoke with my husband Owen about a piece you were writing. Yeah, he's come down to Thorndyke to talk to you, and I'm trying to reach him. I thought you might be together. Or maybe you might know where he is. Anyway, give me a call back," she said, and then she left her own number and hung up.
The landline shrilled out in the kitchen, making her jump. She ran to answer it, thinking that if Lemoyne had been right and Sir Owen's phone had died, and he was certainly due for an upgrade, he'd had the thing for over a year, then maybe he hadn't been able to recall her mobile number off the top of his head, which would be typical, really, since she knew all his numbers off by heart. And so he was calling the flat to get in touch with her, to reassure her that all was well. And not just that, to tell her about Burnham Wood, to explain what it was, and why he'd kept it from her. And then they'd laugh together over the fact that finally, after all these years, he'd really, truly managed to surprise her, and she wouldn't have to confess that she had read his email, and she wouldn't have to doubt him, and she wouldn't have to wonder if he'd betrayed her, and she wouldn't have to grieve. "Hello?" she gasped. It was Lemoyne.
"Jill, it's Robert," he said,
his voice seeming heavier now and much further away.
"I don't know how to tell you this."
And that was the last thing she heard.